Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Well, in a moment, we'll listen in on the goings-on in Washington, D.C. as Joe Biden prepares to take the oath of office and become the next U.S. president. Donald Trump will be president for another 53 minutes, and then Joe Biden will take the oath and become the next president. We're going to hear Pacifica's coverage of the swearing-in of the new president in just a moment. But first, about a half dozen listener comments about yesterday's program, mostly in which we were talking about how some people become brainwashed to believe things that aren't true. For instance, that the inauguration was not going to happen. And the first call, though, is something that came in last Friday about something the person heard on the air in the afternoon on Friday. So here we go. About six listener comments that have come in the last few days.
Yeah, good afternoon. I was wondering if this program or this station is strictly left, like leftist leaning, or I'm listening right now and this person is discussing that the BLM riots weren't nearly as bad as what happened at the Capitol. If you look at it in just the numbers, let alone psyche on America, that might be one of the craziest things I've ever heard. You're talking about billions in damage, people dying, all kinds of terrible stuff for 4 months, all sorts of racism. And now you're talking about a few people acting up at the Capitol. The people that died were on the side of the Patriots. So it's like you just can't stop lying, and it's getting scary. And I hope that your program can maybe look at both sides of the issue instead of being in your echo chamber and thinking that killing babies is an okay thing and makes you a righteous person.
It's Patty from Sarasota. I wanted to use one word as to why there is a Trump cult. It is called faith. It is misplaced faith, because everybody's talking about how the Trump supporters and the quote religious. You need to know there's those of us out there who go by the one book. I go completely by the one book. I do not believe in conspiracy theories. I look for facts, and I'm a heavy believer in discernment, factual discernment, and heavenly discernment. I really think you need to get a forum going of Christian believers who are completely different. It's extremely frustrating to me because we are out there. There are even certain ministers out there who never, never wanted Trump as president.
I'm calling about the show that was on Tuesday the 19th about Trump followers and their beliefs. Trump's corruption has caused trust in truth and facts to become blurred or completely obscured for his followers. We have to hold Trump accountable for all his crimes before, during, and now after his horrible term as president, even if it plays into his use of victimhood that he uses to manipulate his followers. Some Trump publicans will go to their graves believing his lies or claiming that they do. Some people take great comfort in abandoning reason and letting a sociopath do their thinking for them. It's too bad that many of them love their guns as much as they love the lies. And I wonder why they are so fearful. The world must be a hugely scary place for them.
Hello, this is Kevin in Bradenton, and I'd like to say that a house divided against itself cannot stand. And if you believe in the drivel that's being spewed by people like Alex Jones and the likes of him, then you probably also believe that Trump won the election. And after thinking about it, I got to say this, that we're at a point in this country where people can pray all they want, but it's going to take a lot more than prayers to save us now. Thank you.
This is Eric from Riverview. Hey, I just had a question for all the Trump supporters out there, especially those that no longer call into the shows. Now, after all these years of saying no collusion with Russia, even though there's ample evidence to prove there was collusion, as well as Trump's own actions over the last 4 years showing his admiration for dictators like Putin and Kim Jong-un, I asked them, why would a Constitution-loving Trump supporter want to sell a government laptop to the Russians? Is that just what American patriots that stormed the United States Capitol building waving rebel flags do these days? Or is that something that a traitor to the country would do, asking for a friend?
This is Rob calling from Sarasota in regards to the Capitol insurgency. Trump lost the election. Trump lost the recount. Trump lost in 60 U.S. courts. The insurgency at the Capitol was simply a Hail Mary pass, straight out of a dictator's playbook to stop the certification of the election. His supporters that performed criminal acts at the Capitol are now being hunted by the FBI, and they still think that Trump will save them. Reality for these people won't set in until their first night in a federal prison when their cell door shuts and they realize they have been hoodwinked by Trump.
Well, those were all listener comments that have come in over the last mostly 24 hours. One of those calls came in on Friday. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. We're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to go up to Washington, D.C. right now and get Pacifica's coverage of the inauguration of Joe Biden. Pacifica is the network that includes five of some of the oldest community radio stations in the country. And we're going to hear the hosts, Gloria J. Brown Marshall and Sunsara Taylor. And their guests include this hour, Chris Hedges, historian Gerald Horn, and Andy Z. Here's Pacifica's coverage of Joe Biden's inauguration.
Of the Democratic Party in Silicon Valley to further narrow the possibilities for debate. They're not going to implement the kind of radical New Deal type proposals that will address the very real suffering among the working class and the working poor. And we must remember that, of course, that the worst economic misery has been borne by people of color, primarily African Americans in urban areas. But the state has imposed, in essence, militarized forces of occupation, which use indiscriminate lethal force. And then, of course, the system of mass incarceration as its two primary forms of social control to keep that segment of the population in check, while also essentially making it illegal for people of color to own guns, especially in urban areas, while allowing white nationalists to amass arsenals of assault-style weapons in their homes. So the divisions, the media itself is become completely partisan, including my old employer, the New York Times. The Pew Research Center last summer ran a poll. 91% of the readers of the Times are identify as part of the Democratic Party. 94% of the people who watch MSNBC, 87% of the people who listen to NPR. And then, of course, the inverse is true with Fox, I think 94-95% as Republicans. But those, by siloing people within their own echo chambers, by pitting demographic against demographic, by refusing to address the ravages that have swept across the country, creating tremendous suffering, all exacerbated by the economic fallout of the pandemic. And now we're on the cusp of all these evictions. It's clear that Biden's trajectory throughout his political career has been abject service to corporate and imperial power. They used to call him Senator Credit Card, because a lot of credit card companies are headquartered in Delaware. And so, yeah, a return to the new normal is disaster.
Well, let me ask you, following up on there's a lot in what you raised. If we had more time, we could explore multiple dimensions of it. But I want to ask about this question of how people understand what's real, what's true, which is related to your question about your points about the media. You've written that we live in postmodern times, and I think you've drawn connections between that and what you describe as neoliberalism. And so I'm wondering, how do you see that coming together and how people understand what's true? This has been a period where misinformation, campaigns of lies, campaigns of conspiracy theory have spread on truly a mass and very dangerous scale. How do you see this, and do you see a way of reining that in?
Yes, you're right, but on both sides. And so the self-identified liberal media, CNN, MSNBC, the New York Times, get a pass when they shouldn't. They gave us 2 years of the Russiagate conspiracies, and it finally resulted in nothing. There was no there. The New York Times ran this appalling, and I speak as someone who spent 7 years in the Middle East, I'm an Arabic speaker, this appallingly racist, Islamophobic podcast called The Caliphate, based on an imposter who sold you the worst stereotypes about Muslims. It was just audio snuff porn is the only way to describe it, crucifying people and thrusting knives into their heart. I mean, all of us who came out of the Middle East smelled a rat the moment it came out, but it catered to their audience. And then you have seen quite a marked partisanship on the part of these media outlets in the service of the Biden administration. I mean, even to the point where the New York Times routinely calls the John Podesta emails, which were published by WikiLeaks, misinformation. That's not misinformation. Nobody has ever challenged the veracity of those emails in the same way that nobody has ever challenged the veracity of the information that was leaked off of Hunter Biden's laptop, which is quite damning to Biden and his son in terms of corruption and fraud and everything else. So that both sides of the media landscape, not just the right-wing media, have engaged in misinformation to serve their particular political agendas. And that's what's so dangerous, that the people have and people remain trapped within those siloed systems of information where their own proclivities and thoughts and prejudices and opinions are just fed back to them. And that widens the divide. It reminds me very much of Yugoslavia, so that whole factions of the country cannot speak to each other. And I'll just close by reminding listeners that one of the roles of, and I'm talking about CNN in particular, is to demonize. So when we see the people in the mob going into the Congress, and all we ever hear are thugs and fascists, and I'm not in any way condoning what they did, of course, but without exploring the roots of that rage, what Emil Durkheim would call the anomy, the dislocation, the very real frustration, suffering, economic misery that has gone into this expression of rage in of course, a very negative form. It's what the sociologist Roger Lancaster called poisoned solidarity. That's what it was. But we're not going to address.
We're going to have to wrap it up.
The renting apart of the country by demonizing one side against the other. We've got to look at the root causes, which are largely economic and social, that have created this.
Thank you, Chris Hedges. Thank you so much. And
yeah.
We're going to, because we actually are in the midst of an inauguration, and so we do have to speak to the fact that that Joseph Biden and Dr. Jill Biden, as well as Kamala Harris and Doug Emhoff, her husband, have arrived, and they are moving closer to the actual inauguration. Sansara?
Oh, I just want to say thank you, Chris Hedges, Pulitzer Prize-winning author, for joining us here, and I know we'll have time in the future to explore some of this more fully. Gloria, you want to take us to our next guest?
We do have a lot packed in, and it's,
we have a lot packed in, and we need to stay focused on the fact that the reason why we're here is because not just what Chris Hedges said about normalcy never again, that's very important, but it's also the Biden inauguration and the national people's mandate. That national people's mandate, I think, is so important for us to understand. One of my primary questions is, what should the people demand from the Biden administration? And although we have our first person of color, known person of color, as Vice President of the United States, what are we supposed to expect from this administration, as opposed to being not just Trump? Who are they supposed to be? What are they supposed to give? What are we going to demand? And what are we going to have to protest if we don't get it? We have next with us Gerald Horn. And Gerald Horn is not just someone who has written several books on many different areas, but he is also a professor at the University of Houston who's spoken often on these issues of economy, these issues of politics, and neoliberalism. Welcome, Dr. Horn.
Thank you for inviting me.
And so, Dr. Horn, and I start with you. What should we demand from this administration?
Well, we should demand that he use his pen to execute executive orders, particularly with regard to police terror in our communities. That is to say, immediately ceasing the shipping of so-called excess Pentagon military materiel to urban police departments so that they can use them
And let me break in for one moment. On the air, we have Senator Amy Klobuchar, who is now speaking. She's a Democratic senator from Minnesota. But you're saying, Dr. Gerald Horn, that he needs to use his pen. And there are so many things he needs to undo from the Trump administration. What are some of the things you think, the top 10, that need to be undone by the use of the executive order? And I would say the use and abuse of the executive order, because the executive order was never meant to be used as a form of legislation. But what would you say are the top mandates for undoing some of the Trump administration's disastrous executive orders?
Well, obviously, entering the Paris Climate Accord, rejoining the World Health Organization, tightening relationships with the United Nations, particularly the Human Rights Council and UNESCO, the United Nations Education, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. I should mention parenthetically that the Human Rights Council, as we speak, a resolution is being debated examining police terror against Black communities in the United States. And the best case scenario coming out of the Human Rights Council could be sanctions against the United States imposed by the international community. Certainly, there needs to be re-entering the World Health Organization. But I think that in order to understand the weightiness of this particular moment, it would be useful to take a historical perspective. If you let your mind reel back to the inaugural address in 1944 of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, it was quite a social democratic document, but that was a representative, that was a reflection of the conditions, the anti-fascist war, the rise of socialist parties and communist parties, but that was quickly eroded in 1946, 1947 by anti-labor legislation, the Taft-Hartley Law. And if there's anything that Mr. Biden and the Democrats should try to reverse, it is this anti-labor mania that has governed Washington for the past 75 years, because it will be difficult to break the stranglehold of neoliberalism as long as labor is weak. It cannot happen by dint of Democratic Party action in Congress alone. There needs to be street heat. There needs to be mass action. And historically, not only in the United States and worldwide, that presupposes a strong and vibrant labor movement, which presupposes making it easier to organize trade unions. And also it presupposes some action by the Democrats in Congress to raise the minimum wage and also to pass this most recent stimulus bill so that people who are suffering from evictions and suffering from mass unemployment can get some relief from this United States government.
And as we go forward, what should we demand? We the people. From the Biden administration, is it enough to have a woman of color, a woman and a woman of color as vice president? We made that mistake during the Obama administration by just assuming the fact that he was the first African-American or person of color to be president of the United States, that that would also mean that he would represent our interests in the room. And that didn't happen. It didn't happen often enough. Some people may debate that it did happen, but it didn't happen to the extent that I expected. So what are we to expect from this vice president of color when it comes to issues dealing with people of African descent and the crushing blows that we've taken under criminal justice or injustice, I should say?
Well, to repeat, I think that there are a number of things that the Biden administration can do through executive action. Certainly, as long as you have this 60-vote threshold in the U.S. Senate to pass legislation, it's going to be difficult for the Democrats, even if they were positively intentioned, to push through legislation. And so we need to consider quite seriously eroding or getting rid of the filibuster, which therefore would help to erode that supermajority mandate. But as noted, I think we need labor law reform because we need to unleash the power of organized labor so that the people themselves can make legitimate demands. But likewise, I think we need to expect from those who campaigned on certain promises to execute those promises. And that would include Mr. Biden, who after his victory in November was solidified, said that he owed a debt of gratitude to the Black community. We expect to collect on that debt. That would include not only what I've already mentioned with regard to not sending Pentagon excess military materiel to urban areas, but also having the Solicitor General, who argues cases in the U.S. Supreme Court on behalf of the administration, refuse to argue cases that further entrench the power of police departments, such as this archaic rule of qualified immunity, which makes it easier for police officers to escape penalty after executing one of our brothers and sisters in the streets.
And when we're talking about pushing through social movement and political power programs for the poor, for African Americans, for the immigrant populations, what is it that happens? I have to say, we didn't get what we wanted from the Obama administration, and now we have the Biden administration coming in. And the question is, some kind of way, bringing the country together always lands on the back of Black people, the backs of immigrants. But they always want to bring the country together, saying that we're so divided. We've been divided since slavery, et cetera. So how do we juggle these things? If you were going to advise these people in positions of power, like a Chuck Schumer, what would you tell him to do? If you were in the room with him, what would you tell him to do?
I would tell the Democrats that it's in our strategic interest to prosecute these criminals, invaders, and miscreants who tried to execute a counter-revolution on January 6th. This will have a number of positive outcomes for our movement. Number one, it'll take off the streets many of those who are harming our people on a regular basis. Secondly, it will introduce strains into the Republican Party coalition. We should see as a strategic objective to see a weakening, if not a split, in the Republican Party. And therefore, I looked with interest at the newspaper accounts that suggest that Mr. Trump is thinking about forming a so-called Patriot Party to weaken the Republican Party. We should encourage business to continue withdrawing donations from the Republican Party, because to the extent that the Republican Party is weakened with its stranglehold on the Euro-American working class and middle class, to that extent, Black communities can advance.
Excellent, excellent. Something that you've spoken of, a neoliberal policy, what does that mean to you?
What that means is the market is the messiah. It means that public interest should be privatized. With regard to education, you should privilege private education and charter schools over public education. You should privilege toll roads over freeways, for example. This has been a constant theme in the system of capitalism, but it was turbocharged after the victory of Ronald Wilson Reagan in November 1980 is inauguration in January 1981, which inaugurated a new era of neoliberalism. It was continued, I'm afraid to say, by Democrats, many of whom were supported by leaders in our communities, speaking of Bill Clinton in the first instance. And this neoliberalism has wreaked havoc all over the globe. But I would like to think that January 6th marks the turning point with regard to the weakening of the right wing, which spearheaded this neoliberalism, which then enticed many Democrats to go along with it. And I would like to think that, as with 1861, when the slave owners refused to accept the deal from President Lincoln to continue slavery, just not have it expand territorially, the slave owners overreached and lost everything, billions of dollars in property and enslaved Africans. I would like to think that the right wing overreached on January 6th by trying to organize a coup d'etat, and that this will lead to their ultimate weakening, the imprisonment of many of their leaders, the cutting off of donations to the Republican Party, et cetera.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Gerald Horn, the Morris Professor of History and African American Studies at the University of Houston, and author most recently of The Dawning of the Apocalypse, The Roots of Slavery, White Supremacy, Settler Colonialism, and Capitalism in the Long 16th Century. Thank you so much, Dr. Gerald Horn.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Horn. So throughout the day today, we're going to be bringing in pieces from our sister stations and affiliates around the country, from Pacifica affiliates and producers in our network. And the first one that we want to bring to you comes from New Mexico, from our affiliate KURU. And let's just go to that right now before we come back to our inauguration coverage.
Hi, this is Marcus Hansen, station manager for Gila Members Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico. And here are some voices from our community.
This is Nan, and my vision for America is that we let go of our fear and not only tolerate, but embrace our differences to live in peace and true community.
I'm Jamie Newton. I yearn for an America that invests less for war and more for peace, health, and well-being, and a sustainable environment, and where all of us treat each other kindly.
My name is Laura Romneres, and my vision for the United States of America is a place where people speak up about the things they're concerned about and also listen to each other.
My name is Ken Kepler in Silver City, New Mexico, and my vision for America is that we all discover and uncover our common humanity by taking the time to learn something from people from another culture or race or country. Learn how to sing a song from Guatemala, hum a tune from a Chinese immigrant, find an indigenous person and listen to their view of existence, talk to an Islamic immigrant and find out about their family and where they come from. Let us all grow into our humanity.
My name is Jeannie McCleary, and my vision for America is that we can always learn from one another. Sing a song you learned from a neighbor or a new friend. Cook a recipe that you found in an old cookbook and share it with your family. Be kind and loving.
Okay, well, we want to thank Marcus, the general manager at KURU, for that piece. And right now we're going to cut into the live coverage of the inauguration. There is a convocation being given by Reverend Donovan. Let's go to that live.
232 years ago, Archbishop Carroll prayed that you, O creator of all, would assist with your Holy Spirit of counsel and fortitude the President of these United States, that his administration may be conducted in righteousness and be eminently useful to your people. Today we confess our past failures to live according to our vision of equality, inclusion, and freedom for all. Yet we resolutely commit still more now to renewing the vision, to caring for one another in word and deed, especially the least fortunate among us, and so becoming a light for the world. There is a power in each and every one of us that lives by turning to every other one of us, a thrust of the spirit to cherish and care and stand by others, and above all, those most in need. It is called love, and its path is to give ever more of itself. Today, it is called American patriotism, born not of power and privilege, but of care for the common good, with malice toward none and with charity for all. For our new president, we beg of you the wisdom Solomon sought when he knelt before you and prayed for an understanding heart so that I can govern your people and know the difference between right and wrong. We trust in the counsel of the letter of James. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. Pope Francis has reminded us how important it is to dream together. By ourselves, he wrote, we risk seeing mirages, things that are not there. Dreams, on the other hand, are built together. Be with us, holy mystery of love, as we dream together. Help us under our new president to reconcile the people of our land, restore our dream and invest it with peace and justice and the joy that is the overflow of love. To the glory of your name, forever. Amen.
You're listening to the Pacifica's live coverage of the inauguration of Joe Biden live from Washington, D.C. here on 88.5 FM.
Ladies and gentlemen, please remain standing for the presentation of our national colors by the Armed Forces Color Guard, the singing of our national anthem, and for the Pledge of Allegiance. Gentlemen, here for the singing of our national anthem, accompanied by the President's own United States Marine Band, please welcome Lady Gaga.
However, Lady Gaga is here to sing it.
She's here to sing it, and one thing it does make me recall is how few artists, we're going to see a lot of artists today at this inauguration, how few truly popular, beloved artists came to perform for Donald Trump at any of his, you know, that was always a thing that stood out. So this is a definite contrast.
Rockets red glare, the bombs burst
But it is a part of the pomp and circumstance of this moment.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome from the city of South Fulton, Georgia, Fire and Rescue Department, President of the International Association of Firefighters, Local 3920, Fire Captain Andrea M. Hall, for the reciting of the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. What you are all about to be part of America is a historic moment of firsts. To administer the oath to our first African American, our first Asian American, and our first woman vice president, Kamala Harris, it is my great privilege to welcome to the inaugural stage the first Latina to ever serve on the Supreme Court of the United States of America, Justice Sonia Sotomayor.
Ladies and gentlemen, please remain standing for the oath of office, followed by musical honors.
All right, so please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Kamala Davy Harris, do solemnly swear.
I, Kamala Davy Harris, do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
That I will well and faithfully discharge.
That I will well and faithfully discharge.
The duties of the office on which I am about to enter.
The duties of the office upon which I am about to enter.
So help me God.
So help me God.
So we have it, the first African-American, the first Indian, Asian Indian descent, the first woman to be sworn in. And I have to say, it is an emotional moment for me. And she is a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority as well, and so am I. But I'm still concerned about the fact that I hope that she doesn't become what will be someone who has the position without having the power and representation of the African-American community and women.
Now, we're watching this and you see Mike Pence in the crowd. It is notable. For the first time in many, many years, Donald Trump, the exiting president, is not present. Right now, we have Jennifer Lopez getting ready to perform. She's notably, for those who can't, who are obviously you're listening, not watching, she's wearing all white, which is, in an occasion like this, an obvious homage to
Jennifer Lopez,
women's suffragettes and freedom fighters of the past. Beautiful,
accompanied by members of the president's own United States Marine Band.
land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Islands, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. As I went walking down that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me.
Jennifer Lopez singing This Land Was Made For You And Me. And this is very interesting when you think about where we're going from here. If we have positions of power and we are people of color, and we're women in positions of power, are we going to do the same thing that white men paternalistically did? Are we going to do something different? This becomes a very clear issue of concern. And we have Senator Klobuchar, and we're moving now into the inauguration of Joseph Biden. It's now time. Chief Justice Roberts of the Supreme Court will swear him in.
Supreme Court of the United States, John Roberts, to administer the presidential oath to the next president of the United States, Joseph R. Biden.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stand for the oath of office, followed by musical honors.
Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., do solemnly swear.
I, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
The office of President of the United States.
Office of President of the United States.
And will, to the best of my ability.
Will, to the best of my ability.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend
the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
So help you God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. Thank President. You.
And it is done. And we now have a new president, Joe Biden. is the President of the United States. It has happened as a smooth transition of power. And I've said this many, many times throughout my life. There are so many times in which this country has disappointed me. As a child, as an African-American, as a college student, a lawyer, a civil rights activist, as a college professor of constitutional law, it's this transition of power that moves me. This is what
moves me. And Trump did everything he could to prevent it from being a peaceful transfer of power. So I'm here with Gloria J. Brown Marshall from Law in the Land in WBAI Radio. My name is Sansara Taylor. I host We Only Want the World for WBAI and WPFW in Washington, D.C. And we are really honored to be doing live coverage today on behalf of our stations and our sister stations around the country. We're broadcasting in Berkeley, KPFA, in Los Angeles, KPFK, down in Houston, KPFT. We're broadcasting at other stations around the country, and we're really glad to be joined in taking you, all of our community of listeners across this country, through a very historic moment.
I hear people cheering outside. I hear drums beating. There are people hollering. Speeches will come, yes, but the joy of the people to be out from under this fascism and this dictator that we've had the foot on our backs for 4 years in ways that are immeasurably damaging to us physically, psychologically. We don't even know. And we've been in an abusive relationship. And we finally have some moment to breathe free. And I think people are joyously out in the streets as they were at the time of the election before it was then tainted by the insanity of Donald Trump. And now we have Joe Biden, who wants to give his speech that is one in which people should be brought together, but not on the backs of those who have worked so hard to keep this democracy going. And I say the African-American voters have been at the forefront of keeping our democracy going. And I hope he has something to offer for us as well as others who still believe in a democracy.
It is now my great privilege and high honor to be the first person to officially introduce the 46th President of the United States, Joseph R. Biden Jr.
You're listening to Pacifica's live coverage of Joe Biden's inauguration on 88.5 FM WMNF in Tampa. We're going to stick with this right through 12 o'clock.
Vice President Harris, Speaker Pelosi, Leader Schumer, Leader McConnell, Vice President Pence, my distinguished guests, my fellow Americans, this is America's day. This is Democracy's Day, a day of history and hope, of renewal and resolve. Through a crucible for the ages, America has been tested anew, and America has risen to the challenge. Today, we celebrate the triumph not of a candidate, but of a cause, the cause of democracy. The people, the will of the people, has been heard. And the will of the people has been heeded. We've learned again that democracy is precious. Democracy is fragile. And at this hour, my friends, democracy has prevailed. So now, on this hallowed ground where just a few days ago, violence sought to shake the Capitol's very foundation, we come together as one nation, under God, indivisible, to carry out the peaceful transfer of power as we have for more than two centuries. As we look ahead in our uniquely American way, restless, bold, optimistic, and set our sights on the nation we know we can be and we must be. I thank my predecessors of both parties for their presence here today. I thank them from the bottom of my heart. And I know the resilience of our Constitution and the strength of our nation, as does President Carter, who I spoke with last night, who cannot be with us today, but whom we salute for his lifetime and service. I've just taken the sacred oath each of those patriots have taken, the oath first sworn by George Washington. But the American story depends not on any one of us, not on some of us, but on all of us, on we the people who seek a more perfect union. This is a great nation. We are good people. And over the centuries, through storm and strife, in peace and in war, we've come so far, but we still have far to go. We'll press forward with speed and urgency, for we have much to do in this winter of peril and significant possibilities. Much to repair, much to restore, much to heal, much to build, and much to gain. Few people in our nation's history have been more challenged or found a time more challenging or difficult than the time we're in now. Once-in-a-century virus that silently stalks the country has taken as many lives in one year as America lost in all of World War II. Millions of jobs have been lost. Hundreds of thousands of businesses closed. A cry for racial justice, some 400 years in the making, moves us. The dream of justice for all will be deferred no longer. A cry for survival comes from the planet itself. A cry that can't be any more desperate or any more clear. And now, a rise of political extremism, white supremacy, domestic terrorism, that we must confront and we will defeat. To overcome these challenges, to restore the soul and secure the future of America, requires so much more than words. It requires the most elusive of all things in a democracy, unity. Unity. In another January, on New Year's Day in 1863, Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. When he put pen to paper, the president said, and I quote, "If my name ever goes down into history, it'll be for this act, and my whole soul is in it." My whole soul is in it. Today, on this January day, my whole soul is in this. Bringing America together, uniting our people, uniting our nation. And I ask every American to join me in this cause. Uniting to fight the foes we face, anger, resentment and hatred, extremism, lawlessness, violence, disease, joblessness and hopelessness. With unity, we can do great things, important things. We can right wrongs. We can put people to work in good jobs. We can teach our children in safe schools. We can overcome the deadly virus. We can reward work and rebuild the middle class and make health care secure for all. We can deliver racial justice and we can make America once again the leading force for good in the world. I know speaking of unity can sound to some like a foolish fantasy these days. I know the forces that divide us are deep and they are real. But I also know they are not new. Our history has been a constant struggle between the American ideal that we're all are created equal and the harsh, ugly reality that racism, nativism, fear, demonization have long torn us apart. The battle is perennial, and victory is never assured. Through Civil War, the Great Depression, World War, 9/11, through struggle, sacrifice, and setbacks, our better angels have always prevailed. In each of these moments, enough of us
Live.